on radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
Good evening and welcome to SBS World News Radio. I'm Peggy Giacomelos.
And I'm Michael Tomolaros. Coming up tonight,
we need to find out very, very soon the full story behind this, because potentially there's been criminal offences committed.
More questions raised about police raids on the Australian Workers' Union earlier this week.
Also on the program, new research shows nearly half of all Australians would support a partial ban on Muslim migration.
And
I'm just going to try to do my best season with the girls and hopefully we'll go as far as we can.
The W League kicks off tomorrow and we meet one of its international players.
Those stories and much more coming up in the next half hour.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Michael Tomolaros. Employment Minister Michaela Cash has faced more questions over her role in police raids on the Australian Workers' Union earlier this week. Senator Cash repeatedly told Senate Estimates yesterday her office did not tell the media about the impending raids. But after an admission from her senior media advisor, David DeGaris, that he had tipped off the media, she changed her account. Mr. DeGaris has now resigned. In Senate Estimates today, Senator Cash has maintained that she had no knowledge of the raids nor any contact with the media, and that she told the Prime Minister that.
I was not aware of it at the time, and I was not aware of it when I gave those answers yesterday in Estimates. All answers that I gave were based on the knowledge that I had at the time. At the earliest opportunity, I came to this committee and I advised that I had been made aware that a staff member had unfortunately misled me.
The federal opposition is calling on Senator Cash to resign, saying her explanation about her officer's role in tipping off the media regarding federal police raid is not believable. The party also says the Prime Minister either didn't ask or knew not to ask about the matter when he met with Senator Cash and Mr. DeGaris yesterday. Labor's employment spokesman Brendan O'Connor says Senator Cash should step down immediately.
She must resign because it beggars belief she did not know of the role of her office in tipping off the media in relation to a raid by a Commonwealth regulator that reports to her. It beggars belief, and if the Prime Minister has any regard for the Westminster system and ministerial accountability and responsibility, he will dismiss his minister.
Independent MP Andrew Wilkie's call for an inquiry into the casino industry has been shot down in Parliament after he only managed to secure the backing of three other federal MPs. Adam Bandt from the Greens, Rebecca Sharkey from the Nick Xenophon team, and Independent Cathy McGowan were the only politicians to support Mr. Wilkie's call. Mr. Wilkie earlier told MPs a fifth Crown Casino whistleblower had come forward about illegally tampered poker machines, saying one of his staffers saw the machine on the casino floor on Sunday before it was removed days later. He says he doesn't understand the lack of support from an inquiry.
No support, or no overt support at least, from the Liberal, National or Labor parties. Look, frankly, that's shameful. There are so many serious allegations swirling around now about Crown Casino and the casino industry that you would think, a reasonable person would think, that the major parties would support a parliamentary inquiry.
Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews has defended the actions of himself and his wife after a car accident in 2013. His wife, Catherine Andrews, was not breath tested after a crash in the seaside village of Blairgowrie, which resulted in serious injuries to a 15-year-old boy. Ms. Andrews was driving the car but wasn't breath tested at the scene by police. The state's corruption watchdog is looking into the incident. Victoria Police Commissioner Graham Ashton says both police officers at the scene thought the other had breath tested Ms. Andrews. Both officers were later disciplined for the incident. Mr. Andrews says he and his wife were both concerned for the boy who was hurt, not concerned as to how the incident would be perceived.
One of the police officers apologised to Catherine. She said, "I'm really sorry that we didn't breath test you. We should have." I don't know why it was done. Our focus was on the poor kid in the road. We weren't focused on how it might look or protecting ourselves. You know, we weren't insisting on a breath test. We just let the police do their job. We were absolutely focused on the young man and getting him the help that he needed as soon as we possibly could.
Jacinta Ardern has been officially sworn in as Prime Minister of New Zealand, with New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters her deputy. Ms Ardern, who became leader of her Labour Party in July, was sworn in the national capital Wellington by Governor-General Dame Patsy Reddy. Her coalition partner, Labour New Zealand First and the Greens, will form the coalition government. Ms Ardern thanked her supporters.
Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for the confidence you have given us. And I can tell you, there will be good days and there will be bad days. But no matter what, we will always remember the vote that you gave us, the vote of support, and the debt of gratitude that we owe you and that we owe New Zealand. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's go and do this.
National Party leader Bill English, whom Ms Ardern displaced as Prime Minister, will continue on as opposition leader. An explosion in the Ukrainian capital Kiev has left a policeman dead and four other people, including a parliament member, injured. The blast happened late Wednesday near the entrance to the internet television station Espresso. In a statement on Facebook, the Interior Ministry said the blast injured a lawmaker with the Nationalist Radical Party and killed his bodyguard. The statement says they are investigating whether it was a terrorist attack. The witness described the blast.
That was a very powerful blast. I've never heard something like this before in my life. When I ran out, the car was on fire. There was a totally destroyed bike nearby. People are saying that the bike exploded because the car was damaged, but the bike was affected so much that only the frame was left.
And finally, US music legend Fats Domino has died aged 89. He was one of the pioneers of rock and roll in the 1950s. He sold 65 million records, more than anyone else except Elvis Presley in that period. His hit songs included Blueberry Hill and Ain't That a Shame. And finally, a look at tomorrow's weather. In Perth, a shower or two, a top of 19 degrees. Adelaide, afternoon showers developing, 32 degrees the maximum. In Melbourne, becoming sunny, a shower at night, 27. In Hobart, mostly sunny, 24 degrees. In Canberra, cloudy and 23. In Sydney, showers clearing, 23. In Brisbane, sunny, a top of 30. Cairns, sunny, 31. And Darwin, a possible shower or storm, 34 degrees. And Peggy, that's it from me. All of these stories can be seen on SBS World News at 6:30 tonight.
Thanks a lot, Mike. That's Mike Tomalaris there from the SBS Newsroom. And across Australia, you're listening to SBS World News Radio. Peggy Giacomelos with you. The time is 8 past the hour. As we just heard from Mike, Employment Minister Michaela Cash is standing firm as questions mount around her involvement in a media leak. Senator Cash has been forced to admit it was her office who tipped off the media about police raids on the offices of the Australian Workers Union, with a staffer responsible having resigned. But as Andrea Niehoff reports, she maintains she has nothing to answer for.
Same questions, different day. Michaela Cash has faced a fresh round of questioning from Labor senators after admitting a member of her staff alerted the media to impending federal police raids on union offices in Sydney and Melbourne earlier this week. At a Senate estimates hearing, the employment minister has been grilled over when and how she found out about the raids, insisting she didn't mislead the Senate on 5 occasions, as she was given misleading information. She's maintained that she has not had contact with the staffer who admitted to the leak and whose own source of information is unknown. Senator Cash explained the sequence of events.
And last night, during the dinner break, as I have stated, I sought further assurances from my staff. And to say that I'm disappointed is an understatement. But my staff member came to me and advised that, without my knowledge, he had, in the course of discussions with journalists, indicated that he had received information that a raid may take place. As I also stated yesterday, I was not aware of this at the time. I was not aware of it earlier when I had given evidence.
In subsequent meetings with the Prime Minister, who didn't ask her any further questions, she assured him that she was not the origin of the leak. Senator Cash also told senators she's not considering resigning.
Minister, have you considered resigning because of these terrible positions that you find yourself in?
No, I have not.
But you don't rule out having discussed your resignation with the Prime Minister?
As I have stated, I am not going to canvass the ins and outs of detail of discussions that I had with the Prime Minister, but I had discussions with the Prime Minister this morning.
The Federal Opposition says Senator Cash has no choice but to resign. Labor's employment spokesman Brendan O'Connor has demanded the Prime Minister intervene.
She must resign because it beggars belief she did not know of her of the role of her office in tipping off the media in relation to a raid by a Commonwealth regulator that reports to her. It beggars belief, and if the Prime Minister has any regard for the Westminster system and ministerial accountability and responsibility, he will dismiss his minister.
Echoing this, Greens MP Adam Bandt is emphasising the importance of finding out who told the minister's office about the raids.
We need to get a straight answer to that. The fact that the minister isn't interested in finding out the answer to that question speaks volumes about this. We need to find out very, very soon the full story behind this, because potentially there's been criminal offences committed, but there's certainly been misconduct that demands that the minister must go.
But Senior Government Minister Christopher Pyne says the minister has done nothing wrong and has been open and honest.
The reality is that Michaelia Cash told the Senate the truth, and as soon as she found out that she'd been misled, she corrected the record. Now, that's all you can ask her to do in the circumstances, and I think she's done the right thing.
The Australian Workers' Union has lodged a Freedom of Information request with Senator Cash's office to try and determine exactly how she learned of the raids. AWU National Secretary Daniel Walton says he finds it difficult to believe Senator Cash didn't have prior knowledge about the searches.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a ministerial office or a politician that if they were given the tip-off or made aware that the AWU is about to be raided, that the staff have solely kept that information and not had a conversation with the minister.
A statement from the Australian Federal Police rejects claims it conducted the raids for anything other than legitimate legal reasons. The AFP says it had no reason to question a search warrant authorised by a magistrate.
Thanks to Andrea Nihal for that report. And thanks for tuning in here to SBS World News Radio, where the time is 12 past the hour. New research shows nearly half of all Australians would support a partial ban on Muslim migration. Three quarters believe the country is already full. That's according to the Australian Population Research Institute's latest survey of Australian voters' views on immigration. Michelle Rimmer has more.
The results from Australia's National Survey on Migration are in, and when it comes to migrants, more than half of voting-aged Australians say less is more. Report author Bob Birrell from the Australian Population Research Institute says the results show a disconnect between what Australians want and the immigration ambitions of the country's major political parties.
Given that we're talking about more than half of voters, it is striking that both the major parties, or plus the Greens, are ignoring this issue and indeed quite disdainful about the feelings of ordinary people about the issue.
Mr. Birrell says negative attitudes towards migration may be driven by the perceived impact of population growth on quality of life.
The problems associated with Australia's very high population growth, higher than almost all other developed countries, are now starting to bite. Most respondents thought that population pressures were adding to difficulties of urban congestion, housing affordability, job competition and the like.
The survey of 2,000 people also found nearly half of Australian voters would back a partial ban on Muslim immigrants. Terrorism analyst Greg Barton acknowledges that fear of religion-linked terror attacks may be behind the strong support for a ban, but he says reducing Muslim immigration would not improve safety and could instead make things worse.
If we allow this idea that banning Muslim migration is somehow beneficial, it'll actually undermine our security because it'll reduce levels of trust and social cohesion, it'll drive up levels of alienation, it'll make it easier for recruiters and harder for their family members to speak up when they have concerns.
Immigration Minister Peter Dutton says it's important for his government to find the right balance when choosing who they let in.
So I want our economy to grow. I want people to be spending money in local small businesses, building houses and adding to the strength of the economy. So we need to get the balance right. We've adopted the same policy settings that John Howard did. That is that we have about two-thirds of the intake, which is skilled, and one-third around family.
He adds the government has already taken steps to slow the flow of migrants coming to Australia.
In the Labor years, the number peaked at about 305,900 in 1 year, which was an enormous number. We've got that number down now below 190,000.
FECA Chair Mary Petetsos says Australia's leaders should focus on changing attitudes towards migration rather than embracing the current closed-door majority mentality.
We are a country that should and will continue to have popular migration policies and a multicultural community that thrives. And that's really what we should all be trying to work on.
That's FECA Chair Mary Petetsos ending that report by Michelle Rimmer. And we want to know what you think about the major news stories of the day. You can weigh into that debate and many others at SBS News on Facebook and Twitter. That's at SBS News on Facebook and Twitter. Still to come.
I think it's amazing that so many Australians have already cast their vote in this survey, but it is really important that we make sure all Australians have their say on this very important issue.
According to the latest polls, figures show a 60% to 40% split in favour of yes in the same-sex marriage survey. That story coming up after this break. And don't forget, you can check out many of our stories online anytime at sbs.com.au/news/audio. Coming up a little later.
She's been over here 4 weeks prior to the World Cup qualifier. We conditioned her well. By all accounts, she travelled well and very technical on the ball, very, very aggressive. And she's going to add something different.
The W League kicks off tomorrow and we meet one of its top international players. That story coming up in a little while. But before that, former Olympic swimmer Ian Thorpe is urging Australians to post their surveys back by tomorrow. According to the latest polls, figures show a 60% to 40% split in favour of yes. If same-sex marriage is legalised following the postal survey, the government is expected to come under pressure to pass legislation before Christmas. Natasha Kalios reports.
In the final lap, before votes are counted, Yes campaigner Ian Thorpe is urging Australians to cast a yes vote in the same-sex marriage survey and to have it in the mail by 6 p.m. tomorrow.
I think it's amazing that so many Australians have already cast their vote in this survey, but it is really important that we make sure all Australians have their say on this very important issue. We know that we have a tremendous amount of support for marriage equality amongst the community, but what we really need now is for people to get their survey forms back in so that we can hear their voices and count their votes.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics is recommending tomorrow as the deadline for mailing votes. Forms must be received by the Bureau by November 7th to be counted. It's also prompted a warning from the former Olympic swimmer for young people, in particular, to get their votes in. He says data shows people aged 18 to 35 haven't returned their ballots in the same numbers as older Australians.
The majority and the vast majority of young people really support yes, but we also know that they have not returned the forms as great as that particular group that also have the least amount of support for marriage equality.
The latest polls suggest most Australians support same-sex marriage, with the most recent showing almost 60% of those who had already voted had ticked yes. But the No campaigners dispute that polling. Monica Dumit is a spokesperson for the Coalition for Marriage and says there are millions of Australians yet to vote.
We've seen so many different polls tell us a lot of different things over the last few months and even years. What we do know is that support for a change in the definition of marriage has dropped significantly since this campaign started. What we do know is that there are millions and millions of Australians out there who have voted no. So I'm not sure about the 60-40 numbers that are coming through.
Results will be published on November the 15th, and if yes is successful, pressure is expected to mount on the government to pass legislation before Christmas. But the No campaign says there may not be time for the government to address their concerns.
During this debate, a lot of concerns have been raised about protections for everyday Australians against the consequences of redefining marriage. Nobody has seen a bill yet. None of these concerns have been addressed. And so I'm not sure that the government, if a yes vote was to prevail in that unlikely event, I'm not sure that the government would have sufficient time in the 2 weeks left, the two sitting weeks left in Parliament to address those concerns adequately.
Celebrants who marry same-sex couples are bracing for a boost in business. Scott Duncombe is a celebrant in Sydney and plans hundreds of commitment ceremonies.
If you can imagine, you know, getting, you know, 10,000 destination weddings coming here for Australia, what's that going to do to the economy as well? Because they bring all their friends, their family, and, you know, it's going to be another celebration of 100, 200 people every time. And it could be midweek as well. So, you know, the weekends may be full at the moment, but you know what? The destinations one, destination weddings, they actually do midweek, which is fantastic.
About 75% of Australians have participated in the same-sex marriage postal survey, but 4 million people are yet to return their forms and time is running out. The outcome of the survey will be published on November the 15th.
Thanks to Natasha Kallios for that report. 23 past the hour here on SBS Radio. Moving overseas now, and a rerun of Kenya's presidential elections is set to proceed as planned despite opposition resistance. It follows a failed bid to delay the new elections when only two of the seven Supreme Court judges showed up for a hearing. Greg Diet has this story.
Kenya's Supreme Court annulled the country's August elections, ruling that there'd been irregularities and illegalities. It ordered a fresh election and now has been unable to hear a bid to delay that rerun because the majority of the judges failed to appear in court. The Deputy Chief Justice failed to appear because unknown gunmen had shot her bodyguard earlier this week. Another judge was reported to be ill, and two others didn't appear for undisclosed reasons. The head of Kenya's election board says, based on assurances from the relevant authorities, the election will proceed. He says he's consulted with the main opposition leader, Raila Odinga, and the incumbent president, Uhuru Kenyatta.
Last week I met the Right Honourable Raila Odinga, and we discussed the readiness of the commission and the political temperature in the country. Earlier on this week, I also met the president to discuss the same issues. The president gave assurance of protection for all Kenyans, whether they vote or not, and regardless of what part of the country they come from.
President Kenyatta is calling for calm and has urged Kenyans to vote. He says security forces will be deployed nationwide to ensure order during the vote. But Raila Odinga says he wants his supporters to boycott the election, which he's called a sham. He's calling on his coalition to become what he calls a resistance movement, accusing the president of moving a relatively stable and open country towards authoritarian rule.
We shall mobilize all progressive forces in the country to ensure that a fresh, free and fair presidential election is organized within 90 days.
The Secretary General of Kenya's ruling Jubilee Party, Raphael Tuju, has issued a warning to anyone planning on disrupting the poll.
We as a party will take serious action, serious legal action against any individual who obstructs or harasses any of our supporters who decide to exercise their constitutional and democratic right to vote tomorrow. And that warning is also relevant to our agents.
In the city of Kisumu, an opposition stronghold, police have fired tear gas at demonstrators. But a Odinga supporter, Alan Omondi, says their voices need to be heard.
They have to look at us as a voting bloc. We are a given fraction of the voting bloc. more than a half of the voting bloc. So it's very important that what we feel and what we demand for must be met.
The tensions have raised fears of a possible repeat of the violence that left more than 1,600 people dead and thousands more displaced after the election in 2007.
Greg Dyett with that story. The W League kicks off tomorrow and it's a more international competition than ever before. The growth of the women's game in Australia has attracted many talented imports, including the Western Sydney Wanderers' latest recruit, Lee Falcon of Israel. Born on a kibbutz, she travelled the world playing the sport she loves and now Australia is on her radar. John Baldock takes a closer look.
At just 25 years old, Lee Falcon has packed in plenty of success already into her sporting career. She's won cups in Israel, titles in Germany, and gone all the way with Denmark's Brøndby to the last eight of the Women's European Champions League. On Sunday, her new team, the Western Sydney Wanderers, travelled to Newcastle to play the Jets. And Falcon is looking forward to the start of the next chapter of her footballing adventure.
I'm going to give my 100% and so I'm just going to try to do my best season with the girls and hopefully we'll go as far as we can.
Born in Israel after her American mother went there to live on a kibbutz in order to study Hebrew, sport has always been hugely important. Falcon says growing up in the farming commune environment a kibbutz provides has helped her on subsequent journeys.
I met a lot of cultures when growing up and obviously had my other half of the family in the U.S. So I was always open for other cultures, and growing up in Israel you get to meet a lot of even religions and different mindsets. So you always have to know that there are a lot of different people than you are.
She'll be busy this year helping her country qualify for the 2019 World Cup in France and aiming to play a part in the Wanderers reaching the finals for the first time. Falcon only returned 2 days ago from a World Cup qualifying match in Serbia. But despite her busy schedule, her coach Richard Byrne has no concerns the extra travel demands back and forth from Europe will be a problem for her.
She's been over here 4 weeks prior to the World Cup qualifier. We conditioned her well. And by all accounts, she travelled well and very technical on the ball, very, very aggressive, and she's going to add something different.
There are three other foreign-born players at the club, and along with the local-based squad Byrne has assembled, Falcon believes the club can reach the playoffs for the first time in its history.
We really want to do it, so we're aiming for that and just playing hard, get better as a team, and yeah, I'm very excited to start the season.
While she's clearly raring to go, there are some things in Australia she's happy to steer well clear of.
I'm not a good surfer, but I love going to the beach and obviously just be there. And I'm kind of afraid of the sharks here, so I don't know if I'll try it here, but we will see.
Thanks to John Baldock for that report. Let's take a quick look at what's making news before we go. Australian Federal Police Commissioner Andrew Colvin has released a statement rejecting suggestions it failed to act independently in this week's raids on the offices of the AWU. The Foreign Affairs Department says it did not know about a letter from North Korea to Australia prior to Foreign Minister Julie Bishop making it public, and an explosion in the Ukrainian capital Kiev has left a policeman dead and four other people, including a parliament member, injured. That's the program for this evening. Catch Janice Peterson now on SBS News. I'm Peggy Giacomelos. Thanks for listening. Don't forget you can download our stories anytime at sbs.com.au/news/audio.